we're scrambling to get ready. We'll shuffle the sideshow off in just a minute. Bear with us for a second. How many of you guys like the tight turnarounds between sessions? Okay, all right. I'm not sure how to take that. Here's a small one. All righty. So, Dave, as you can see, David's cycling through to make sure everything's plugged in. Are you good? We're good. All right, you know what? Somebody left goodies. They're not exotic goodies. Does anybody like these things? Nobody? I'll eat. Oh, yeah. Anybody else want to take their chances? All right, everybody look up here and pay attention, because if I hit anybody in the head, it's not my fault. All right, ready? And one for the cheap seats. I can't throw that far. Everybody has to move up front.
This is a ball. It's a ball.
Anybody want a ball? All right, try to lob these.
I've got a brick.
All right, now, last challenge. Back row. Somebody call a doctor. This way I know if you're paying attention, because if you can catch them, you're paying attention. We're right in the wireless, right? Okay. Come up and get it more later. I'm going to kill somebody doing this. All right. He'll tell me when he's ready. So for our edification, Dave and I, we work in the DX team for Microsoft here, and our team is kind of the ones behind TechEd. We do a lot of this work. We do a lot of the track ownership, a lot of the sessions. And so to gauge what we're doing, how many of you were here yesterday in the part one of this? Oh, excellent. Now, how many of you have done the MakerDin? That's awesome. Cool. Those of you who have not, we'll keep it running for another probably hour, 90 minutes after this session. So the stuff we're going to show you here in this session talks about how that is set up, how the services behind it work, and what we're going to do with it. So on a different tack, how many of you are here for the first time at TechEd for the first time? Cool. And IT pros, developers, perfect. Tourists, okay.
DBAs.
Oh, sorry, DBAs. Sorry. And C-level executives, thank you. Thank you for being patient with us. It's all good. Is that the go signal? Are you ready?
No, it's not quite the go signal.
Oh, okay, so we'll keep chatting for a minute. So the Internet of Things is one of those bits and pieces we've been looking at that has really started to take off. And if you look at where a lot of things in the industry are going, or where a lot of the angles are going from cloud computing, large-scale computing, you need to think about what all is out there and what you could possibly do. The Internet of Things is anything that can talk to the Internet that has a little bit of smarts in it. So Dave's going to go through a little bit about a cleaner definition of that. But from my angle, I'm looking more at the systems behind it, the services. How do you handle 10 million inputs a second? Right? Massive systems. If you think about tagging cattle, or cars, or smart meters, or watches. How many of you in here have already bought like a Pebble or the iWatch or something? Oh, only less than I thought, actually. So you have that. You have a phone. You probably have a tablet/laptop. These are all could be considered Internet of Things, anything that can communicate with the Internet. And each one of us will start to carry more and more of these as life goes on. If you have systems that are consumer facing, you'll have a broader reach on this kind of stuff. If you have systems that are core infrastructure, smart meters comes up a lot in these kind of conversations for electricity or natural gas. That's a big audience. That's a big amount of data to have to process, large amount of data to process. So we're going to have a look at that and how these systems work. As soon as Dave nods, because he was supposed to start the session, but I'm more entertaining, I guess. He can throw candy farther. Does anybody in here so far have done an Internet of Things project? You have? Oh, yeah, we talked to you with the Makerdin yesterday, didn't we? Yeah, right. That's very cool. For me, as a hobbyist, I'm thinking of monitoring my solar panel array. And I was an idiot because I thought, oh, well, we'll just cover the roof in solar panels. Little did I know that that requires an industrial inverter. It was too many solar panels for a normal inverter, so now I have to buy special equipment to get at it. But now you can buy solar panels with individual inverters on them, and you can get data sent to a central point and measure individual panels and how each panel is doing. That's just Internet of Things. With common protocols like the MQTT protocol that Dave talks about or that we use in the Makerdin, it's pretty easy. So there's a lot of people working on the software to do this to make it so you just have to contact a normal SDK and you can take advantage of these things, right?
So I think we're good to go.
We've got the signal.
So the quick turnarounds are great, except when you're setting up lots of gadgets. But I think we're all good to go. So welcome to the session. I think we've probably had the intro. So my name is Dave Glover. We've got Rocky Heckman here.
Indeed.
We've got our Twitter tags, and we're very accessible around the place, and both been hanging out at the Makerdin.
Yeah.
And if you've got any questions, either rock up at the end or come out to the Makerdin. So this session here is a very quick recap on just for the Internet of Things, just for the folk who didn't
the
make it along.
The first part of it is.
Yep. And then most of this is then sitting some of the technology we used behind the Makerdin app scenario that everyone's been building upon. So that's the kind of the guts of the session, and it's predominantly cloud centric session, and we're just going to talk through some of those things. I think I've already given this a bit of a plug. But if you haven't registered up on the IoT developer community, then please head up there. There's a, on your mobile phone, you just go aka.ms/techedIoT or head to iot.msdeveloper.com.au and just register up there. The main thing that we do is we'll be running events, we'll be running workshops, we'll be running competitions, we'll be doing a whole lot of things. We've already got a really cunning idea for a potential Christmas idea around the Internet of Things. So there is stuff that we're doing. And this will probably be our main communication channel. We'll obviously Twitter things and things like that. But I find that Twitter is very easy to miss.
Very one way.
Very one way and very easy to miss. So, and we'll email out and then you can contact us for more questions, things like that. If you haven't already done the Makerdin's just behind here. And it's a great opportunity just to get a bit of hands-on with Internet of Things and play around with some prototyping boards and just kind of get stuff blinking and data heading up there. And we will do a prize draw. It'll probably be in the latter part of this week. I'll collate the data, and I've got a random app, a random prize draw app, I should say, as opposed to a random app. And I'll just choose 5 people using that app out of the list of people that we...
What they could win, Dave.
Oh, and basically, thank you, Sans Rocky. And the winning prize is actually going to be a prototyping kit. So it's going to be a NetDuino 2. It's going to be a NetDuino 2 Plus, I should say. A prototyping shield, kind of more resistors than you can shake a stick at. Some LEDs and temperature sensors. It's a pack. It's about $115 worth. So that's kind of what the deal is. And I said I've got 5 of those packs. And you have to have basically completed the labs to be in the draw for that.
If you have gone out there, make sure after you complete the lab, make sure somebody scans your badge, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. So a bit of a recap, and apologies for the folk that have already seen this. In Melbourne, I think we had about 60 to 70% had re-attended the second session, but I was conscious of the third 30% just really had no idea what we were talking about. So just bear with it, it's about 2 slides. So kind of like, what is the Internet of Things? This is my very high level view. If someone asks you at the barbecue and there's been reading about Internet of Things and really you almost can't pick up the press without some discussion behind it. So I think I described it as a third wave of the internet. So if you think about the fixed computers being the first wave, we're kind of in the middle of the mobile. And then the rest is in terms of all the objects, all the kind of creatures, all the kinds of things that can be connected up to the internet, either directly or indirectly, is kind of what we're classifying as the Internet of Things. And like all good fashions, things kind of go around in cycles. And in many respects, the Internet of Things has been there before, particularly in around what we called embedded space or machine-to-machine kind of scenarios. You can imagine if you had large process control systems for manufacturing, for example, technology is similar. The biggest change now, of course, is really commoditization of the silicon, of the processors, of the sensors, of the actuators, being able to manufacture at a much more competitive price and things like that. But the ones that are really capturing people's attention at the moment are things like wearables, so things like Fitbits. I think I said down the lines of things being sewn into or manufactured into clothing, so be it for decorative kind of purposes or for kind of usage kind of purposes as well. And smart cars, smart cities, and all those kinds of things. And pretty much characterized by being specialized and connected, either connected directly to the internet, as the NetDuinas are being connected directly to the internet, or via a gateway or a hub. And the hub could be your phone, for example, like Fitbit. And sensors and actuators, things for measuring heart rates and steps and temperatures and things like that, and actuators for turning lights on, and some sort of context, be it time. If you think about your Fitbit, you've got an ID, you've got some sort of context about that data that's been collected and been pushed up onto the internet.
Another, so that's something else cool about the Fitbits. Sorry to interrupt.
Yep, go for it.
How many of you have them? Real quick. Okay. Have you noticed that when you go to near anyone else with a Fitbit dongle, your Fitbit will still sync? Even if it's not the dongle that came with your Fitbit or the one in your laptop, you can just walk past somebody in the hallway who's got one plugged into their machine and your Fitbit will still sync because it's autonomous. Your Fitbit has its own ID, its own recordings, and it just looks for a connection on any dongle. So you can do that kind of cross-system work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very cool example. The other thing that I touched upon was really some of the client technology that either we're working on or is prevalent across the industry. And just as a very quick recap, and I promise I won't be for too much longer on this, but we've got the microcontroller based on the left-hand side, so things like the NetDuinos and Gadgeteers, which are running the .NET Micro framework. We've got the things like Galileo and MinoNow boards, which are going to be geared towards running Windows on devices. And I think one of the differentiators between the microcontrollers and the ones down the middle running Windows on devices, the Windows on devices will be much more of a managed asset. So you'll be able to do things like application deployment and application update and management, all those types of things. Whereas a microcontroller is a bit more like you've built the app, you've pushed it onto the controller in your scenario, and then if you want to go and update them, you kind of have to go back to the physical device and then kind of reflash them effectively. And over here, we've kind of got the main players in these, which has really defined the category in some respects, are things like Arduino. So you'll see that NetDuino is effectively an Arduino running .NET. So it has the same electrical and physical characteristics, except it's running .NET as opposed to C and C++. And obviously Raspberry Pi is a Linux box out there, and the Edison, which is at the moment is also a Linux and runs a Baytrail CPU. So that's kind of a very high view of the devices out there, but particularly microcontrollers. And the price point for these are really kind of in the $50 to $80 range, I guess, particularly if you're buying them en masse. Mm. So that's a very quick view of just kind of the microcontroller landscape.
Now, real quick something. Several of you are taking pictures of the slides. For the record, you can download all of these. All the slides you've seen at TechEd will be made available for you to download, so you'll get the whole deck. So it might save you some camera space. You can get all the slides for free.
But feel free to take photos.
Yeah, take photos fine, if you want.
Okay, so we've got the MakerDin running out there, and I kind of built the MakerDin solution really over a number of months, and kind of understanding what I think was happening in the industry, what protocols, kind of approaches to connecting devices up onto the internet and how to get them communicating. And went through kind of a whole lot of iterations and a whole lot of thinking about what you do around small devices, small microcontrollers and things like that, versus larger, more capable boxes, be they running Linux or running things like Windows CE or Windows, you know, the full Windows or other operating systems for that matter. And The conclusion I came to, particularly for constrained devices, is that the industry by and large at the moment anyway, has gravitated towards this thing called message queue telemetry transport. And you might have seen it out there, maybe you kind of wonder what it was. And it's something that has actually come from IBM. It was actually very closely associated with IBM WebSphere and really came from their process control system. So they wanted a really lightweight, memory constrained system by which you could pass messages around systems and ultimately up into WebSphere. So that was kind of where these things came from. But it's also taken root in the microcontroller world, so be it Arduinos, Netduinos, and a whole range of devices out there, Raspberry Pis for that matter. You'll find that MQTT is just kind of across all of them. And it's very small, it's kind of a socket, opens it up and has this very small overhead in terms of its packet that goes up into the internet. I think it's like 4 bytes of overhead over and above the actual packet of data. So people love it because it's very, very contained and very efficient protocol. There are also some downsides, and you go onto the web and you start looking around, you know, MQTT versus other protocols and things like that. And you'll find that we're actually going to provide support for MQTT, but I'll talk about that in a bit later on. But the main thing about these protocols is it's very geared towards low memory devices and low CPU, low resource devices. And that's kind of where people are going at the moment. And the other beauty about it is it's kind of everywhere. So there's a great implementation if you go up into NuGet and you go and type in M2MQTT, and you will find an implementation up there for inside Visual Studio, and you can go and build for Netduinos, Windows phones, for Windows desktop applications, for modern apps. That MQTT library is up there. And again, it's on Android, it's on iOS, it's on Mac. It's pretty much everywhere. So it's quite a useful protocol to be able to talk to these things. So the other options, and I was at an Internet of Things meetup a couple of weeks ago, and he said they in their organization, they were having this debate about, do I go HTTP REST, and you know, I put everything up there, and it's a lovely REST API and all those types of things, or should I go MQTT or other protocols out there? And actually the conclusion we came to was that some controllers and the capabilities with them don't even support HTTP. They might support IP or TCP/IP, but they don't actually even have an implementation of HTTP. And I think he actually stepped back and said, oh, well actually that probably helps clear my thinking in terms of the kind of protocols I can use. Because they didn't really want to go and implement their whole HTTP and their whole stack and things like that. So often you find it's very much dependent on the type of device and the scenario, whether you go things like HTTP and go for a lovely REST API, or do you go and use things like MQTT. There's another protocol out there which we actually provide first-class support for on the service bus inside Azure. And that protocol is called the Advanced Message Queue Protocol, and you'll often see it out there as AMQP. And again, if you go hunting across the internet, you'll find lots of discussions about the hostability, for example, of particularly around multi-tenanting of MQTT versus AMQP. But whatever, we'll find that we are supporting both. And some
maybe
more. We have
had some game clients that use AMQP. AMQP. For high-speed ingestion of game data and game and player data. And I'll talk a little bit more about game implementations for systems later. But yeah.
So we're going to provide support across these different mechanisms for passing data from small devices up into the cloud and make that really kind of seamless and easy for you. The other approach that I find, which we didn't take here because we had not quite such constrained devices, but a lot of folk are looking at kind of like this hub idea or a gateway idea, like a smart home hub, for example. And where they're using low-level protocols, maybe a socket-level protocol to talk to a hub, and then from the hub, which is maybe a more capable platform, from that platform then talking maybe an HTTP REST API up to Azure or using AMQP. So you're seeing kind of a combination of approaches, just depending on the scenarios and the level of capability of the devices which people are trying to code against and build solutions. Yeah. So the solution, the approach that I took was very much around this MQTT, mostly because of availability and constrained resources. And it was there, and I could use it, so it was all good.
That's always handy.
It's always there. Handy.
Yeah, that's a good.
So in terms of the overall approach that we took with the labs and with the solution, and by the way, the solution, I will mail it out and we'll make sure that we that all the code, all the documentation will be available for you to go off and play with and delve down into and understand a bit more how it works. So the guts of the solution is actually hosted up in the Azure website, up in the Azure West Coast data center, and it's simply running in a Windows Server virtual PC that's sitting up there, and I'm running something called Mosquito. And Mosquito is an open source MQTT broker. And it's just sitting up there, and it's been sitting up there for weeks or months in many respects, and it's just sitting up there listening for messages. It listens on some sockets, and I think it's on 1833, and it's just listening for messages going up there, and then I've got various listeners that are sitting on that, on those queues, and just picking up those messages. The way the MQTT works, it listens, you basically define a namespace. In fact, you don't even have to define it. You just say, this is what I want to write to, and it'll automatically create that queue for you. And you just want to listen on it. It's a very dynamic approach. And you can listen on a namespace or write to a namespace. So you'll see that on the name, in the solution, the namespace is GB for Glovebox, kind of for Dave Glover. And that's kind of how I got to that one. And then, so we have a namespace of GB / the name of the device / the name of the sensor. So / temp, / light, / sound. And you would have seen it up there in the labs as to kind of why there was a namespace. And that was basically it, because that's the way that Mosquito or the MQTT protocol works, and Mosquito is expecting to have a namespace. So that's very much, so we've got this Mosquito service that's running up on a Windows Server device sitting up in the West Coast data center. And we've got the Netduino, and the Netduino is writing its sensor data as JSON data, as you might have spotted, and it's simply writing and doing a publish. It's an extremely simple API. You just say mqtt.publish and the data and the namespace where it's going, and the data magically appears up there.
Magic.
That's for in terms of publishing data, and you can also sit there and just wait for events, for received data. And when the data comes back down, I get an event throw in, and then I can do whatever I want to do. Now, the other device that I've also got sitting up there, a class of device, is actually an Arduino. And there is also a very good MQTT library for Arduino, and Arduino is a very constrained device. It's got about 32K in which you can deal with it. And I've literally got a device that's sitting up here, you can't see it, but it's blinking away, and it's just sending the data up into Azure. And as far as that Azure service is concerned, it has no interest whether it was coming from an Arduino, a Raspberry Pi, a Netduino, whatever it is. It's just data heading up onto the Azure service. You would have also seen if you did the MakerDen, we also got this Internet of Things dashboard. And the Internet of Things dashboard is just simply listening on the base of the namespace. So it's listening for all devices and all sensors that are living on the GB namespace, for the Glovebox namespace. And we're just picking up the events, the data, the JSON data that's coming up, and that application is consuming the data. And it's as simple as that. And really the technology behind that is very straightforward. If you're in the session that I ran yesterday, you would have seen I had done some integration with Cortana, and I'm going to show a bit more about how that actually works. But again, it's exactly the same principle. I went and created a Windows Phone application. I nuget-ed the MQTT client application, the library in that. And literally, I had Cortana understand the commands. And it was just basically translating that into my Windows Phone app and saying, this was the command that was submitted. And this was the result that I'm going to send it back up to MQTT. That was kind of the mechanism by which it's working. For those very keen of eye, you might have spotted at the bottom of the Internet of Things dashboard, we had the total number of sensor readings for light, temperature, and sound. And Rocky's going to talk about this thing called Orleans. But it's essentially a very scalable way of dealing with a lot of data quickly and rapidly and being able to make decisions up in the cloud. And it's one of the other things I think is also a best practice. When you come to thinking about the amount of business logic that you might want to go and put in a controller and distribute out somewhere, I think my thinking has been much more is keep the amount of business logic in a controller simple. Because the simpler that logic is, the less likely you're going to have to go and change it. So just keep it simple, keep your data formats consistent across all your devices, and then think about making decisions based on an alert or whatever it might be, based on a threshold. Make those decisions in the cloud, because it's obviously easier to go and change the cloud and the business logic behind that rather than going out and redeploying the application onto the client technology. So that's kind of the conclusion I came to, because I tried putting lots of funky logic into the controller, because you can certainly do it. And then when I wanted to go and change it, I had to go back and redeploy it. Whereas things like Orleans, which Rocky's going to talk about, it makes much more sense to kind of do some of the business logic and whatever are the characteristics you want to do, but do those on the cloud, so it's just much easier to manage. Okay, so I've got a couple of demos now, and just to give you a sense of what's going on. So this is the Internet of Things dashboard, which most of you probably would have seen by now. And it's listening, yeah, so we can see that going. And you can see the orange one down here, I've got an Arduino Mega. And as I said, that's pushing data out. The rest of these devices here are all Netduinos. And the Mega is pushing out JSON format in the same format and the same schema that all the other devices are doing. And that's my other bit of advice as well. What applications you're thinking about is try and come up with some sort of consistent schema. Now the industry in general is trying to come up with some standards, some standard ways to describe the schema of the data and the standard ways of describing the types of data. And it's pretty fluid at the moment. So what you'll see inside the solution is my attempt to try and understand what's going on in the industry and look at the standard ways of describing the data within a sensor. Because if you can have a standard way of describing that data in a sensor, maybe you've got a greater chance of being able to take data maybe from another source and aggregating with your source and adding value back to your customers in ways in which you maybe had not really anticipated when you first started off with the application. So my advice is start thinking about the schemas, start thinking about your data types, trying to understand what's going on in the space and in the same industry that you're looking at, and try and come up with some sort of consistency, because I think you can add greater value to your data as you move forward. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is just switch across to hopefully another machine. And a number of you, most of you that yesterday would have seen a very simple app that I had running on my phone. And if I just connect up into my phone, and literally I'm going to fire up Cortana. I appreciate you can't see this. And it's listening away. Turn on light.
Turning light on.
And for those of you, as it's really bright, you'll see that it's actually turned the light on. And I'm going to explain that in a bit more. So I'm just going to say, turn off.
Turning light off.
And Cortana's smart enough. It's that voice has been sent up to the internet. It's done some voice translation, pushed it back down to me, and thinks it's saying this. Is there a matching command?
Imagine the possibilities.
Things like home automation or things like that. So just some really tremendous opportunities to really integrate applications into the heart of these phones with Cortana and using the language integration. So I built this very simple app, and which I'll also publish the code for this. Now, the way you do these things is you describe this thing called a VCD. It's basically a voice description file. And this application here is called Light. So I could, as an end user, I could have said, in fact, I would do it, Light, turn on. Oh, no, hang about. Light on.
Turning light on.
Yeah, so light is the core of the application. Light off.
I have a feeling you could get some very questionable phrases in here.
Light off. Ah, okay, we're gonna turn the light off by hand.
As a safety measure, he put buttons
yes,
in there.
As a safety measure, I put buttons on there. But you can also put an alias. And you'll see up here, I've got an alias called turn, which is hence why I'm saying turn on, turn off. And the other trick that I learned the hard way, I have to say, I spent more time figuring out the language I should have been using than writing the rest of the application.
Given his accent, you'd think it wouldn't have taken that long.
Yes. And it's kind of a combination of Kiwi and English. That's how it's kind of got there. And all the samples that you'll find for Katana integration are US-centric. So the language will be EN-US. And I was thinking, oh, the obvious thing, if I've got my phone, I think my phone's set up to Australian, the obvious thing for doing Cortana integration would clearly be EN-AU. And I must admit, I think I tried every combination of AU or just EN or nothing. And it wasn't until I started playing around with it, I realized in Australia, the Cortana is actually UK. And it's so you need to go and put ENGB for Great Britain. And that was probably 3 hours. I'm hoping I'm gonna save you. And you'll see that then it comes down to various commands. So Cortana is going through this list of strings, and you can see I can say turn on, turn light on, turn lights on, turn on lights, turn me on, on, turning lights off. I had a mate, I think I explained to you that yesterday I had a mate who kept on shouting, turn me on. So I added that in just
for
him.
You did that on purpose. Dave did that on purpose.
So, but anyway, you get the idea. It's extremely straightforward to go and describe what effectively are going to be the key phrases for your application and what will be your potentially your home automation. And then if I go down to my app xaml.cs file, and again, I'll make this code available. And I just scroll down here a bit. I know this is way too much code. But effectively, inside your application, you need basically a hook to say, is this a voice command? And if it's a voice command, what I do then is I, surprise, surprise, I have turn light on and turn light off. And if I go back to the XML document, those are the commands I'm gonna see when I come into the execution of my code. And literally what I'm doing is I'm doing an MQTT publish of the word on and the word off. And in my code that's running on there, I'm looking for the word on or off when I eventually receive that. So that's what's happening on the phone side. And I think most of you probably saw what was happening on the device side. Basically, I had an event. I'm just listening for the event on a particular channel. And just so you can see what's going on there, if I go into my service manager and scroll down here. Yeah. The command, I'm listening on MQTT command channel GB/command. And I'm just listening on that. And when I send a message from my phone, I'm writing to that channel. And that means that every device out there which is running that code is now, if they had a light connected to them, they would all respond and turn on the lights for all those devices. So you can imagine maybe running something for a conference and being able to turn on all the lights from just one command from your phone. So they're all listening on the same channel, and they were all, if they had lights connected at the moment, they've all just raised a voltage on a pin, which would then, if they had a relay connected, they would turn that relay on. And when I set off, they would drop the voltage on the pin down to zero, down to ground, and they would all turn them off. So that is how the Cortana integration is working. It's really, the guts of it is this command file, and I said that will save you 3 hours, just knowing that you need to use ENGP for Australian-based devices if you're playing around with this yourself. Okay, so I would jump back to my screen. Okay. Sorry, I just realized I was madly pointing at my screen. And but you can see inside, this is solution running on the Netduino. And you can see that that was the command channel I'm listening on the Netduino. Okay. So that was the IoT dashboard and the Cortana integration. Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about is just really what's going on around Azure. And one of the things that really struck me of recent is that pretty much all the Azure teams sitting over in Redmond are thinking about Internet of Things scenarios. So you're going to find it pretty much through everything, from the Power BI groups who want to be able to make sure it's really easy for you to be able to visualize and understand the data, from the machine learning folk there who want to be able to deal with lots of data and provide some out-of-the-box algorithms or ones that you create to be able to make business decisions or alerts or things like that on all these types of data that you're potentially going to be pushing up into Azure. So obviously it's great news now that we've got Azure data centers here in Australia, so one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, and it's going to change in terms of scenarios and latency and all those types of things about getting data up there. So this is kind of like the job lot at the moment anyway, because it's changing all the time in terms of growing, of the kind of services, particularly on the top row here, which are kind of IoT centric in the nature. So I've kind of defined these as Azure building blocks. So kind of one of the key ones there is this thing called the service bus. And the service bus is a great mechanism of getting a message that you might have from some sort of connected device, in this case a Netduino, pushing that bit of JSON data up into the service bus and then having other things listening on that, obviously in a secure kind of fashion, of having other applications listening on that bus, basically subscribing to it, and then saying, oh, I'm going to write that bit of record, that data off into SQL Server because I want to go and do some Power BI data on it, or I want to store it, or maybe I'm going to push it into blob storage because I want a historical record of all that data, and it's really cheap for me to go and write millions of records into blob storage, for example. Obviously SQL Server, you can go and do some fantastic things around there about in terms of data insight. We've got HD Insight there for really, it's basically Hadoop. So dealing with very large data sets. So again, just in the last couple of days, we have generated, I think in the order of 3 or 4 million sensor readings, which have gone up into Azure.
Those are just the light sensor readings.
Those are just the light sensor readings. So and by the time you building your solutions and you've got a whole range of customers out there deploying them, you could have a massive amount of data going up to the system. So it's really kind of geared towards those things. I've kind of touched on machine learning and things like that. So is there anything else here you want to touch on?
No, that's honest? Actually pretty okay. Good.
Yep, so we'll kind of drill into those in a bit more detail. So the one I'm going to talk about, which is at the moment, I guess, the most obvious, is the entry point into Azure, particularly for things like the Internet of Things devices. And as I said before, what we're finding is across the whole product groups that are dealing with cloud compute and inside the Azure team, they're all thinking about what can we do to make Internet of Things scenarios simple. And you're going to find that coming through, and you'll find announcements, all those kind of things, and frameworks and architectures and bits of code that appear in NuGet that will really make this whole connectivity considerably simpler. At the moment, some of this we have to hand crank ourselves, but there is a lot of work going on to make these scenarios just plain simple. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about is this thing called the service bus. And I said, this is the main mechanism by which you can get information into Azure. It's queued, it's stored there, and then you've got listeners on there who can then be picking up the information off those queues and distributing it out to applications based on their availability or based on their throughput characteristics, all those types of things. And it's really geared towards dealing with a large number of ingestion of a lot of data. That's kind of where it's kind of geared towards. And you can see here, particularly with this new bit of technology which lives inside the kind of overall umbrella of service bus, is this thing called Event Hubs. And Event Hubs has this partitioning mechanism, and it's there for scalability. And each partition, I think you can have 32 partitions out of the box,
yep.
And you can request more. each partition can deal with ingesting of about a megabyte per second. And in terms of reading data out of those systems, you can read up to 2 megabytes per second of egress data. And it's a publish and subscribe mechanism. And I said before, it's around this whole scalability around partitions. And you can define partition keys and all those types of things, and there's lots of things in there you can do. And you can set retention, so keep this data in these queues for 14 days or I think up to 30 days. Mm-hmm. So you can define things which kind of make sense for your business. And there's a checkpointing model, all those types of things that you can implement. Now the other thing that we're building, and this is when the process of doing these things, and again, this may change. So, but give you a bit of a heads up. So I mentioned before, so I've already talked about the service bus, and I've already said that AMQP is already a first-class citizen to be able to talk into service bus, as is HTTP, and there's REST calls to talk directly into the service bus. The things that we're looking to add and provide a gateway service is a gateway for MQTT, because we figured there's a lot of devices out there which are talking MQTT already, and we obviously want to make that really easy to be able to move that workload up into Azure. There's another protocol called CoAP, and there's another one called STOMP, and they tend to be the main protocols which are used in low and in resource-constrained devices. You'll see this thing, I think the project name is Project Rakovich. So if you go hunting across the web, you'll find various talks about that in more detail. But the fundamental thing is that we're building gateway technology which will make it really easy, no matter what protocols that you've decided to go and implement, to make sure that workload and that data will go up into Azure really easily and make it simple for you. How are we doing for time?
You've left me 5 minutes. So we're not quite halfway through, and Dave's left me 5 minutes. So see how we go.
We have got 20 minutes.
Not including Q&A.
So what I'm going to show here, and then I will jump over this very quickly, is just some of the things you can do around Service Bus. So I've got the world's simplest demo here, and what this demo is doing, it's listening on the MQTT service data that's coming out at the moment from the MakerDAN, and just show you how you can bridge that data across into the service bus.
Is it listening for someone to say hello world?
No, it's kind of pumping data out already. And what I've got here is, because I want to push this up into worker role and I want to be quite efficient about it, I've got multiple threads. And I've got a thread which is listening on MQTT, and what that thread's sole job and responsibility is to pass that data onto the service bus. And then I've got another two threads. The first thread there is going to listen on service bus and then basically pick that data off and then throw it out to the console. And then I've got a third thread, and its job there is to go and log the data to SQL Server. So that's kind of fundamentally what's going on. And I said, I'll make the code available, but just that's kind of effectively what's going on. And if I go across to SQL Server, and if I just do delete sensor, just to get rid of my data, and fire this up, and I can sense that Rocky is definitely starting to do a song and dance about when I'm going to get off. And we've now got, get rid of all the breakpoints. Okay, so that's the data coming out of the Maker Lab, and I appreciate it's rather too small to be able to see. As I said, this data is being listened for off the MQTT bus broker, been pushed onto service bus, and then this console is listening on service bus and basically reflecting it back into here. And if I go across to SQL Server, if I now go and do execute there, you've seen that I've already picked up 35 records. And if I do a count on that, you see there's 40 records. Anyway, without further ado, I will hand it to Rocky, otherwise I'm going to be slaughtered.
Yeah, hey. It was very good stuff.
There you go.
So one of the things we talked about before in getting this stuff done is the idea of the services behind it and the mass ingestion. What I chose to do for this project was use Project Orleans. Now, Project Orleans is still kind of in a preview mode. It was created by Microsoft Research, and Microsoft Research was presented with a big problem by the Xbox team, and particularly the Halo team. How many people play Halo? Come on. All the rest of you go buy an Xbox, play Halo. They came to the research team and said, look, we need to be able to handle tens of millions of requests per second. And the research team kind of looked at him and went, you're crazy. And then they said, okay, well, now that we got that out of the way, how do we do it? And they came up with this idea of Project Orleans. Project Orleans is an implementation of an actor pattern. Does anybody know what an actor pattern is? Okay. Those of you who don't, an actor pattern is basically where you take an autonomous unit of code and you give it a responsibility, and then you kind of let it sit there. When you need it, you create one, you let it do its thing, and then you just kind of manage its existence. Orleans does all the management of the actor pattern for you. And in our design out here, what happens is after stuff goes through Dave's ingestion bit, there's a listener out here in Azure that's running in Sydney, by the way. That listener worker role is just listening for the events coming off of his Mosquito server. Then it says, okay, I have a sensor. What is it? It's a light sensor. It says, Orleans, here, give me a light sensor and record that reading. As a consumer, you don't have to care if that sensor already exists or not. As far as Orleans is concerned, it always has existed, it exists now, and it will forever exist. In 4 months, I can go back there and say, give me that light sensor, and it will rehydrate it exactly like I left it from the last time. And I don't have to do any of the work of managing its state or anything like that. On the other side of this, we have this REST API. That REST API is just a web service API that calls into the sensor grains, into the silo for Orleans, and pulls the readings out of it. And that's what's displayed across the bottom of the IoT listener service up there. So talk a little bit more about Orleans and how it's used in some of the games and stuff. I'm going to borrow this for a second. So I'm going to put these on the screen so I don't have to mess with it too much. This idea in Orleans, we call them grains. A grain is the actor, and you basically have to work through interfaces. The interface is, you know, I want these methods in it. Now, Orleans handles state persistence differently. So real quick, how many of you went to the Orleans session yesterday? Okay, good. You guys can have a sleep for a minute. But state is handled separately. So you can have these non-persistent grains floating around, which is your actor. It's just your .NET code. You write a class in C# that inherits from the grain object, or inherits from grain, and you run with it, right? But you have to create the interface so Orleans knows how to handle it and what kind of method calls it can route to your grain. So you have an interface that inherits from iGrain, and your grain that inherits from grain. If you want to persist that data, you'll create an iGrain state, and then that's actually the bit that persists it. And I'll show you the code for this in a minute. So one of the things that Orleans is really good at is this idea of the silo and managing the running of it. If you have a scale issue, and you're ingesting massive amounts of data from a game, for example, you've got millions of players logging into this game at one time. And in Halo's case, you have hundreds of thousands of games running at once. And you can figure out which player is in which game. So if you go to the Halo website now and you go to Halo Waypoint, which is an app, it will tell you which player is in which game, what their favorite weapon is, what their favorite score is, their average hits per weapon, blah, 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 blah. That's all managed in Orleans. One of the samples in the Orleans SDK is this presence sample, which is how the Halo team actually implemented this presence system in Orleans. So if you download it, it's just orleans.codeplex.com. You can have a look at exactly what they're doing to manage this stuff. So the idea is that we have this grain, and this grain handles one piece of work. And then we put these grains in a silo. The silo manages standing them up, tearing them down, making sure they're there when you want them. They've got player grains, game grains, a camera grain, anything you can think of that's a unit of work. So I imagine not all of you are game developers in here. Some of you may deal with line of business applications. Imagine a financial system. You can have one game, or sorry, not game grain. Well, it could be a game. You could have one grain that is an accounts receivable entry grain. You can have another grain that is a ledger grain. and one can contain the other. So you just fire off the information at Orleans, it creates the accounts receivable grain for you, adds it to the appropriate ledger grain. And the cool part about this is you can go back to any point in time and say, Orleans, give me the account ledger as it looked at 3:51 p.m. on August 24th, 1941, if you have data going back that far. And it'll show you exactly what it looked like. It'll maintain that state and that information for you through internal timestamping and managing all that data for you. So it abstracts away a lot of that messiness of managing all these different actors. To scale up, we implement more silos. And in this case, the silo for our system out here is running in a worker role in Azure. That's all you need. Now, the way it's set up with the current SDK, it's in a binary format. So you can create a VM or run it like kind of like a Windows service and run these silos pretty much anywhere. The way it scales out is when it gets to a maximum X percentage of your CPU, it will create another silo or spin up another worker role and add a silo to it. Orleans also takes care of knowing where things are for you. So if you have a light sensor grain and you have a sound sensor grain, you don't need to care where it is. Orleans will go, okay, I know where that thing is, let me just handle that for you and go find the right silo and give you the information. So it abstracts away a lot of this for you. I think it's pretty cool. So we've got a type of grain, the grain instance, and a grain activation. The type is basically the interface you create. An instance of it is, you know, in this case, 2,548,308 or 769. If one doesn't exist, you can say, give me a grain with an ID of blah. If that doesn't exist, Orleans makes ones for you with that ID. So as far as you're concerned, it has always existed. It's right there, which is how we can do stuff with these sensors. Every time a sensor reading comes in and it's got that extension on it, light, sound, whatever, we just create a grain called light, a sensor grain called sound, and then it just exists. So we don't have to worry about doing an inheritance or any of that stuff. Now, Orleans was designed for the cloud, so we call it a cloud-native runtime. And ideally, it's the worker roles that are really good at this. In this case, I've got, see if it came up here. And if it's up here, I'll switch to the machine in a second. So yeah, you might as well switch. Six, I think. In this case, we have an Orleans sensor counter. And this is spinning away, going and collecting data from a very busy network. This is actually the CPU percentages of the thing that is running this sensor information right now. And if you look at it, the MQTT listener is the worker role listening to Dave's server. The blue line is the actual worker silo. This is on a very small machine in Azure. We're handling several hundred requests a second, and it's not even peaking 10% of the CPU. Orleans is designed to be very, very efficient. So a small worker role, which is like a 1-point-something gigahertz processor and 2 gigs of RAM, can already handle several thousand inputs a second. On this one, I happen to have turned on auto-scaling, and I noticed that I've never had to use it. It's never hit the auto-scale limit. So in my case, that particular silo, which is right here, is set to auto-scale. Whoops, too far. Sorry. Come on, you can do it. Yeah. So if that thing ever gets to over 80%, Azure will automatically add another server, another silo, and Orleans will handle distributing the load. Now, if you think about some of the games that people are doing, there's a system that people were creating in I think it was England, which is a massive, massive online real-time game. Now, how many of you in here play World of Warcraft or something, or an MMO? Aren't there any gamers in here? They're all home playing. Okay, fair enough.
IoT devices.
A while ago, World of Warcraft set the record for the most simultaneous players on a server. And it was something like 4,900 and X odd people on one server. The group in the UK used Orleans to handle a real-time space battle simulator. No, it was not Eve. their target for the world record was over 11 million simultaneous players. Unfortunately, they couldn't find 11 million players to hit it all at once, but I think the one they achieved was something like 65 million, and the system didn't even break a sweat. So when you think about a sensor on everything, even a car is going to have multiple sensors in it, watches, all this. This is definitely the way you want to do the high-speed ingestion and processing. Now, if you look at what happens, as you need to expand, can you switch back over to the slides real quick?
Sure.
Well, I got to hurry up.
That's my fault.
If one of these things blows up and goes down, Orleans will handle moving the grains that were there, rehydrating them, recreating them, spinning up another silo, and then moving things back and forth. Right? So you don't have to worry about failover or patching or any of that. Orleans will handle that for you. It's built for this like massive social graphs, massive ingestion of data. So as it solidifies and becomes more of a product thing, you're going to see this showing up in a lot of things. We're at the point where we have commodity computing. If you need a server, need a processor, you go to some cloud provider and say, give me one. Orleans takes that one step further. How many of you have used platform as a service? You use mobile services or something, right? You just go in there and say, give me a new mobile service, give me a new database. Orleans is, here's my class, run it. Now all the management has been abstracted away. So I think we've really gotten to the point where commodity computing is just, you define what you want the thing to do and you're off and running. You can do real-time analytics with this, which is kind of what our sensor information is doing. You can make these grains do anything you can do in C# or .NET. And whatever analytics, whatever ingestion systems you have, if you combine this with Stream Insight or our new Stream Inspection system that's coming out in Azure, you can get real-time, non-invasive inspection of messages coming in and out of the system to millions of messages a second. Orleans can help you process that information. So if something hiccups, or you get this pipeline and you get a few anomalies in the system, you can instantly respond to the anomalies and correct the system, or go and find out what's wrong. We might need to skip that video. So that's the real-time analytics. The Intelligent System Service, just real quick mention on that. We're going to skip that video because we are out of time. But it was designed to examine this high-speed input, examine these massive amounts of data, and give you predictive analysis. So by monitoring all these sensors and by monitoring all these systems, the Intelligent System Service can say, okay, look, you're on a glide path here where that thing is going to break in about 4 days. You better send a technician out right now to fix that thing, replace that part before it breaks. So IIS is going to be very, very good at doing highly accurate predictive analysis for future events. Okay, we are out of time, or we got 5 minutes?
We got 5 minutes for Q&A.
Okay. Do you want to see a quick blink of the code, or do you want to ask questions for 5 minutes? Code? Questions? Can you switch back to number 6?
Yep, sure.
All right, so how do you start Orleans? Whoop, that's it. Those 1, 2, 3 lines of code, that's all it takes to spin up an Orleans silo. You put that in the OnStart in a worker role, you now have a silo that's ready to go. Orleans manages where the silos are and how a client finds things through Azure Table Storage. So the client, you tell it, go look in this table to find out where the active silo is, and then Orleans will say, yep, here I am, and that's how it finds out where to go. I'll show you the grains real quick, because that's where the guts of this stuff is. This is the sensor grain. It really is, that's about all the code there is in it, right? So we can do all this ingestion and counting just to count the grains with this state.count. I've implemented a persistent grain here. So I have an interface called iGrainState that actually says store a long value for count for any of these things that are a sensor. And the sensor has a name. So that state write async, I've even been a bit pedantic with this, and I make it persist the state after every read. Now that's a bit conservative, and you might think, oh, that's going to be very processor heavy, because every time one of those sensors sends David a reading, and then we ingest the reading, it also persists it, saves it to disk. But as you saw, it hasn't even cracked 8% CPU, and the I/O is really cheap. So they've been very efficient about this. So getting it, you just get state.count. And then I have a set count method in there strictly in case I need to reset it to zero or something we can do like that so we can fire it off directly. To set up a client to read this, this is the global ASX file for the web service that we have running. And we just need to create the configuration file for Azure since this is an Azure one. And whoops, now I better slow down a little bit here. We initialize the Orleans client, and that's all we need to do. So once we have the client initialized, I already have up the, the controller open. Let me open the controller real quick. This is all we have to do to read information from it. So in the global file, we've initialized our listener. And then we use that listener, that Orleans Sensor Factory, to get a grain. Now, if we don't give it a specific ID, it'll give us a generic one. Or we pass in, get the light sensor, get the sound sensor, get the temp sensor, get the air sensor. And then we just return the count on it. So that's a simple way to set up a client. Orleans has been designed to abstract the complexity away for these massive systems. And it's really easy to use. So that's all I have time to show you. We kind of ran out of time a little bit. But if you want, we can chat about it in the Maker Den, and I can drop some more goodies, and we can show you the code. Are there any questions that you want to yell at us? So what are the thoughts on authentication on the lower level device? Yep. There's a couple things that happen there. On a lot of the devices, if it's Arduino, NetDuino, Galileo based, you can run encryption algorithms. If it's the really, really simplistic sensor devices, you might not have enough for that. So where possible, run the encryption on the device, and you can use an authenticated call. I think, does AMPP support authenticated?
MQTT supports TLS, so TLS transport level security as well. Yep. But essentially username and password. You can also do certificates. The framework, .NET Micro Framework, also supports certificates and those types of mechanisms.
Yeah, so you can use an encrypted tunnel, or the encrypted path for that, and authenticated end-to-end.
I guess if you have any more questions, perhaps come up to the front.
Yeah, go ahead and come up here.
Come up to the front, and I think
we'll leave
tea
the
break
mics on in case anyone wants to hear, but
yeah.
Come up here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming, guys. And go make an Internet of Things.